Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Japan's ruling party has selected its next leader, but can he win the hearts and minds of a pandemic-scarred public? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The ruling Liberal Democratic Party has selected former Foreign Minister Fumio Kishida as its new leader. He's now almost certain to become Japan's next prime minister within days. It was a tight election within the party, but Mr. Kishida is considered a consensus builder, which could prove useful as he looks to replace current Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, who resigned after just a year in office over dissatisfaction of his handling of the pandemic. The BBC's Mariko Oi explains Mr. Kishida's credentials and his plan to steer the economy post-pandemic.
He's probably most well known for his stance against nuclear arms. So he was part of arranging former US President Obama's visit to Hiroshima, for example. But he has been described by his critics as somewhat dull and boring. He wasn't exactly the most popular candidate among the four contenders. Taro Kono, he's a very high profile minister who was in charge of the vaccine rollout. He was the most popular among Japanese voters. But of course, this leadership election was about who's popular among the party's lawmakers and members. And Mr. Kishida crucially had the backing of some of the party's elders and managed to win that election.
As you say, he was not the most popular candidate, and pandemic preparedness has increasingly been a big issue there in Japan. He does have a large task ahead, doesn't he, rebuilding Japan's economy?
Absolutely. When it comes to his economic policies, he has promised to spend billions of dollars to stimulate the economy, but he was quite critical of Abenomics, you know, the economic policy of the former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, saying that it only made the rich richer, and he wants to make sure that the wealth is fairly distributed. So we might see a bit of difference there. But when it comes to foreign policies like China, even though he was quite critical of Beijing, he isn't exactly as nationalistic as other candidates. So when it comes to foreign policies, I think we don't expect too many changes from the current administration of Yoshihide Suga.
The BBC's Mariko Oi for us. Thanks for your time this morning.
No problem. Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, stocks across Asia ended solidly lower today as investors keep close tabs on the possibility of a U.S. debt default and rising oil prices. The future of Chinese property giant Evergrande is also continuing to cause concern. As a bond interest payment looms today, the company said it'll sell a $1.5 billion stake in a state-owned bank. Credit ratings agency Fitch today also downgraded the company's credit score to just above a level equivalent to default. Well, staying in China, for the past several years, the country has spent billions of dollars on international projects designed to stimulate global trade and infrastructure development. A new study from William and Mary in Virginia, though, has revealed the extent of the Belt and Road Initiative's funding, and it says much of it comes in the form of expensive loans concealed from government balance sheets. The BBC's Celia Hatton has that story.
Over the past 18 years, China has financed $483 billion in infrastructure projects, much of it concealed from official government balance sheets because it's in the form of Chinese loans to state commercial banks or development groups. But foreign governments and their populations are often liable for the debt incurred by Belt and Road megaprojects. Researchers found that Chinese state banks prefer to fund projects using high-interest loans that increasingly demand collateral tied to the borrowing country's natural resources.
That's the BBC's Celia Hatton reporting there. New research from the University of Brussels shows climate change is worsening inequality around the world. The BBC's Stephanie Haggerty explains the stark difference in the way changing weather is affecting rich and poor countries.
Fires have raged across Lebanon, Greece, the U.S.
Having a safe place to sleep at night is, right now, is like a godsend.
Floods in China and Germany. In the past few months, climate change has made itself felt all over the world. But it's not a great leveler. The richest half of the world are responsible for 86% of greenhouse gas emissions, and the poorest half for just 14%. But poorer people everywhere will be worst hit by the climate change caused by those emissions, for lots of reasons. Yolanda Lee lives in a low-income neighborhood in Yonkers, New York.
Everything is exposed. The sun is beating down directly on you, and it's just unbearable.
During the June heat wave in the U.S., scientists found that streets in poor areas were up to 3 to 10 degrees Celsius hotter. That's because of too much asphalt, concrete, and the lack of trees.
Trees are life. The role they play in our ecosystem can't be overstated. Where do I start?
Yvonne Aki-Sawyer is the mayor of Freetown in Sierra Leone. She plans to plant 1 million trees in the city. They're part of a plan to help bridge the divide already caused by climate change in her city.
Over 6% of our national population are farmers, subsistence farmers. The effects of climate change means it rains when it shouldn't, and it doesn't rain when it should, and people's crops fail. And because their livelihoods disappear, they flock to the city looking for a better life, and that creates more problems. We don't have the infrastructure to absorb those people. So what you see happening is massive deforestation of our hillsides.
That leaves people here even more vulnerable to extreme weather.
On the 14th of August, 2017, 1,000 people died in 5 minutes, under 5 minutes, when the largest mudslide we experienced happened. We now have, on the hillside of Motame, a gaping hole.
A new research from the University of Brussels has found that low-income countries are going to see more extreme weather events than rich countries.
This is a very sobering message.
Wim Thierry is the lead author of that research.
We integrate the exposure of an individual to heat waves, crop failures, droughts, tropical cyclones, and wildfires and river flooding across this person's lifetime.
He found that children born now in high-income countries will see twice as many extreme weather events as their grandparents did. But children in low-income countries will see three times as many.
About two-thirds of all children born today are born in low and lower middle-income countries. There's also many more children living exactly at these locations which are hardest hit by climate change.
But these outcomes are not inevitable.
If you increase ambition and limit global warming to 1.5 degrees instead of what is currently on the table, then we can substantially reduce the burden on young generations.
That's Wim Thierry of the University of Brussels ending that report from the BBC's Stephanie Haggerty there. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.